Free Will, Love, and Divine Providence. Commentary for the February 22, 2025 Sabbath School Lesson by Stephen Terry, Director, Stillwaters Ministry, www.visitstillwaters.com. After this, the Lord appointed 72 others and sent them two by two ahead of him to every town and place where he was about to go. The 72 returned with joy and said, "Lord, even the demons submit to us in your name." He replied, "I saw Satan fall like lightning from heaven. I have given you authority to trample on snakes and scorpions, and to overcome all the power of the enemy. Nothing will harm you. However, do not rejoice that the spirits submit to you, but rejoice that your names are written in heaven." Luke 10, verses 1 and 18 through 20. Two major theological perspectives compete for dominance in the world today. One school of thought is that God is in control of everything and predestines us to either be saved or lost. In other words, God, not humanity, determines our destiny. We have little choice in the matter. This idea does not come from the Gospels, but from the writings of Paul, specifically twice in chapter 8 of his epistle to the Romans, and twice in chapter 1 of his epistle to the Ephesians. It may come as a surprise to some, but beyond the synoptic Gospels, there are several competing theological perspectives in the New Testament. We have the Pauline perspective, as I have mentioned, but there are also Petrine, Jacobine, and Johannine perspectives, as well as those offered by epistles of uncertain authorship. When we add to that the conflicting perspectives of those books attributed to the same authorship, but nonetheless exhibit a completely different character, such as a contrast between God as portrayed in the Johannine epistles and as portrayed in the book of Revelation, it can be difficult to sort out theological intent, something even Peter commented about regarding Paul's epistles in 2 Peter 3, verses 15 and 16. While it may seem a comfort to some to believe that they are predestined to be saved while others are not, aside from the arrogance of that belief, it runs up against certain problems. First, it links God's foreknowledge to predestination. In other words, the assumption is, if God knows that something is going to happen a certain way, that means he forced it to happen that way. Just as, according to Paul, a potter forms the clay to his intent in Romans 9, verses 19 through 21. But it seems counterintuitive to attribute blame to those who have no choice, no free will in the matter. From some perspectives, it can make God appear more diabolical than Satan. This is not only true when we look at all the misery and evil on earth that God would have to accept responsibility for if everything is predestined by his foreknowledge. It would also threaten the very foundations of heaven if we attribute everything, including evil, to an inability to escape the predestination driven by God's will. If God's will obviates the free will of all his creatures, then what of the rebellion in heaven, where Jesus said he personally observed Satan's fall to the earth? Did God create Satan for the purpose of revolting against his creator? Paul tells us that God hardened Pharaoh's heart to rebel against him in Romans 9, verses 17 and 18. Did he do the same with Satan? How then is Satan at fault if God made it so? Paul felt that the clay had no right to question the intent of the one forming it. But could Paul have been wrong about this? Isaiah differs from Paul on this. As the prophet characterizes God, he is willing to discuss the situation with the lost, even to the point of offering complete redemption instead of condemnation in Isaiah 1 verse 18. We also see salvation as negotiable in the dialogue with Abraham when God's intent was to destroy Sodom and Gomorrah. Abraham asked if the cities could be spared, depending on how many righteous people could be found there. God agreed to spare them if those could be found. But was God deceiving Abraham? If God's intent were to destroy those cities because he already knew their state. He could have said to Abraham, "There will not be even the fewest righteous people you mentioned, because I have made it so." This is the essence of predestination, but it is not what God said to Abraham. We also have the example of Joshua. He and Caleb were the two faithful spies who explored the land of the Canaanites and brought back an encouraging report to the Israelites, advising they go up and take the land God had promised them. Unfortunately, the other 10 spies, who said it could not be done because the Canaanites were too powerful, outvoted them. As a result, the Israelites wandered in the wilderness for 40 years until those who did not have the faith to conquer Canaan died off. After Moses died, Joshua assumed leadership of the people, and he led them over the Jordan River into Canaan to take the land their ancestors failed to claim. Near the end of his career, he told the people, "Now fear the Lord and serve him with all faithfulness. Throw away the gods your ancestors worshipped beyond the Euphrates River and in Egypt, and serve the Lord. But if serving the Lord seems undesirable to you, then choose for yourselves this day whom you will serve, whether the gods your ancestors served beyond the Euphrates or the gods of the Amorites, in whose land you are living. But as for me and my household, we will serve the Lord," according to Joshua 24, verses 14 and 15. The people responded, "No, we will serve the Lord." And Joshua replied, "You are witnesses against yourselves that you have chosen to serve the Lord." For Joshua, salvation was not a matter of predestination, determined by God's will, overriding our own will, but a matter of free choice. If we do not allow for free will, then the 3.5 years of Jesus' ministry, where he repeatedly urged his listeners to use their will to make positive choices, made little sense. Jesus was active in humanity's creation, according to John 1, verse 3. The Apostle John understood the significance of this better than all the other disciples. Humanity was made in God's image, according to Genesis 1, verse 27. Jesus knew exactly what that image is. That is why he urged us to choose counterintuitively to love our enemies, just as God would, in Matthew 5, verses 43 through 48. John understood this to mean that a professing Christian who is not loving is not a Christian, in 1 John 4:8. God is love, and a Christian will be seeking the restoration of that image in their life, the character and image of creation. Peter may have understood things slightly different from John. That may be because, despite his outspoken nature, he fought a constant battle with fear that kept him from fully surrendering to love. Legend has it that Peter was fleeing the persecution of the Christians in Rome under Emperor Nero. And as he was leaving the city, he met Jesus, who was walking toward Rome. Peter asked, "Quo vadis," or "Where are you going?" Jesus replied that he was headed into Rome, for he had many people there. At that point, Peter finally surrendered his fear and re-entered Rome and was crucified per the emperor's order. Peter learned what John had shared, that perfect love casts out fear, according to 1 John 4, verse 18. This is why the idea of predestination, driven by God's foreknowledge, is suspect. If we love God because we were predestined to love him, is that really love? I like to think of it instead like this. The Bible talks of a book of life that contains the names of those who are destined for eternal life. That book was written at the foundation of the world, according to Revelation 17, verse 8. The Bible never mentions anyone being added to it later. It only mentions that some may be blotted out from that tome, in Psalm 69, verse 28, and Revelation 3, verse 5. This indicates that it is God's initial intent everyone should be saved, that no one was predestined for wrath. But love cannot be coerced. That only produces fear. Therefore, to fulfill the image of God we were intended to bear, we must have the free will to love. God is saying, "Yes, I know some will choose to reject my love, but it is not my intent that they do so. They were not created for that purpose. They were created with a free will to love as I love. It breaks my heart that some choose not to be loving. But even their choice defines my loving character, for they have that freedom, despite the consequences and fears that arise where love is cast aside. I continue to love them even so. There are many who are torn and broken by a world that has chosen fear over love. But they are not predestined to live that way. The good news is that free will, despite our fear, continues to be available. At any moment, we can choose to stop walking away from God with hearts given over to fear and begin walking toward Him, where we can learn to love like God in His image. He can replace our hearts hardened by fear with loving hearts, like we had in the beginning, according to Ezekiel 36, verse 26. Thank you for listening to this commentary podcast. You can find the written version of this podcast, as well as hundreds more commentaries and podcasts, at our website at www.visitstillwaters.com. You can also find links to books by the author and other articles written by the author at that website. Once again, it's www.visitstillwaters.com. May God richly bless you and your family.